The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Yes, it is. Coming to you from our remote Carter Subaru studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. We are awaiting the daily coronavirus task force briefing at the White House. And as I said, it has been incredibly news-making the last couple of days. And we've seen the manifestation of that in the Dow Jones up about 2,600 points over the last 2 days as the president has a goal. It might be too aspirational. Of getting America back to work by Easter time, so the middle of April. And we'll see. We'll see if the medical experts say that makes sense, because right now they're still expecting the worst to come. And we are still seeing some exponential growth in this virus. So we're all just trying to muddle through this together. They are debating the coronavirus funding bill, the massive $2 trillion. It's more than that, really, because the Federal Reserve is kicking in trillions as well. And some Republicans have discovered, Republican senators have discovered what they say is a massive drafting error. And what that means is this money should go to help workers who are out of work and should help businesses that have been hurt or closed by the COVID-19 virus. And I'll give you an example of how outrageous. Oh, the massive drafting error is some people would get way more money unemployed than what they got when they were working. And in South Carolina, for example, they would get $25 an hour, but the majority of the workers make far less than $25 an hour. And it doesn't make sense for us, the taxpayers, to pay people more to not work than what they were making when they were working. So all we need to do is make people whole, make them, you know, get them back to where they would be if we had not had this, you know, catastrophe. And it is a catastrophe in many ways, not just health, but economically and what it's doing to businesses. But we can't let businesses or individuals get fat off of it. And I'll give you another example. Amtrak, which has almost no ridership now because of COVID-19, but Amtrak is scheduled to get a $1 billion bailout as part of this package. Amtrak was not financially viable before COVID-19. They only have, I believe, 3 runs in the entire United States that do not lose money. One's in the Northeastern Corridor, New York to Boston, New York to D.C. is another, and then L.A. to San Diego. I think those are the only 3 Amtrak runs that do not lose money. Amtrak is a financial disaster. And I haven't understood for 20 years why we keep subsidizing them. Train travel is an anachronism. And we could, you know, I'm sure Greyhound could pick up the routes if Amtrak were to stop nationally. But my point being that if Amtrak was a financial disaster before COVID-19, it shouldn't get $1 billion because of COVID-19. And so those are the things that have to be under control by our government here. And then you look at what's going on locally, where ridership on Sound Transit and Metro buses down 90% on a lot of runs. 90%. So why in the world wouldn't they just cut the runs? And I'm sorry to the government workers for those agencies, but furlough those employees just as the financially unviable businesses in the private sector have had to do. I don't understand why private sector is going to see a gigantic spike in unemployment and we don't have one cut in government work. Government's got to shrink as much as the private sector shrinks through all of this. And it simply is not fair that the taxpayer, that you and I, have to keep subsidizing a government payroll that has not changed one iota since COVID-19, when the private sector has had to change a lot of iotas. And so there's just, it's so stacked against the taxpayers and against the working people, and it's so stacked for the government and against the private sector. There's no reason for Amtrak to get a bailout. There's no reason. Why is Sound Transit Construction an essential business? Will somebody explain that to me? I get it why Albertsons is an essential business. We all got to eat. But is there a person listening who can explain to me why Sound Transit Construction, for a project that's going to get built 15 years from now, and so, ooh, it'd be 15 years and 3 months if we put it on halt during this shutdown. But government takes care of its own. And so Sound Transit Construction is deemed an essential business. And then, speaking of construction, I am hearing from so many of my listeners who are not just construction workers, but also construction managers, from people who are running big, huge construction job sites in downtown Seattle. And they don't want to have their workers violating the social distancing, but all of that is still deemed essential. Now, why? Why? Because they are creating property tax revenues that government desires greatly. And so you and I get screwed over, but the construction workers, why are they put in a dangerous situation? The construction project managers, who know that this isn't, I mean, they would like to do what is best health-wise, safety-wise, for their employees, but they can't because they've been deemed essential businesses. It's all about driving as much money as possible to government. And that's where I will remain vigilant in watchdogging to a certain extent what's going on with this congressional multi-trillion-dollar bailout. But I'm just a voice in the Northwest in a big, huge nation. But I think you and I together have a significant voice in what's going on here in our part of the world. And I will remain just as vigilant about all of the shenanigans that Jay Inslee and Dow Constantine and Jenny Durkin and Peter Rogoff are playing. Because there's no other way to put it. They are just screwing over the taxpayers right now. If the private sector shrinks, I mean, it's already been trillions of dollars via Wall Street. They are projecting anywhere from 10% to, and the president sounds like he is determined to get people back working before they even hit that 10% unemployment. But the worst case scenario that I've heard is 30%, which would be worse than the Great Depression. But whatever hit the private sector takes through all of this, government should, local government, should take the same hit. And again, that's not because I want government workers on unemployment, but I don't want them exempt from all the hardship that the private sector is feeling. There's just no fairness in that right now. I told you the coronavirus task force press conference was scheduled for the top of the hour at 2 o'clock, which we will bring to you live. It is now 2:30 is the time we have just been alerted. 2:30 this afternoon is when we will go live to that. So let's keep you posted on everything else that's going on. As I told you, you got Joe Biden. He's still trying to stay relevant because he can't campaign. But he's doing all of these bizarre morning show interviews from his home. And I played you one bizarre clip from this morning on CNN. But when you put it together in a montage, this is Donald Trump's biggest danger for re-election in November? This guy here?
What is it like to be a candidate in the time of social distancing?
Well, I'm doing fine, thank you. And I think we've been
public, but first of all, in this crisis,
I'd like
spoke earlier. He's talking.
But and I tell you what, I'm so darn proud. And those poor people who have lost, you know, anyway, it's just my heart goes out to
them. No. Listen, we're to make a choice about who leads this country.
I just can't figure the guy. It's like, it's like watching a yo-yo. I shouldn't have said it that way. It's like watching.
It feels that way. I want to ask. I want. It's okay. About the reporting in the New York Lloyd to Home Alone with children.
Why doesn't he just act like a president? That's a stupid way to say it.
You know,
I guess,
Donald Trump
really
was asked.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No. Probably best I don't.
And I think it's because he just forgot what he was saying there.
I mean, the struggle is real with the delay.
Well, yeah, but
that wasn't all the delay.
He goes down these mental cul-de-sacs. I mean, I have to deal with a delay every day when I talk to Brock and I talk to Wyman and I talk to our guests. And I mean, you can handle it if you're not addled. But I mean, that's just a guy who's. It's bizarre. I mean, it's really weird listening to Joe Biden as he tries to salvage his campaign on these network appearances from his home. It is rough.
It is a scary thought thinking about him dealing with all of this. Like, he would not be doing daily press conferences. I can't see him being able to do that.
Well, it's obvious. And again, I'm not saying this to be mean. Because I truly have compassion for this, having lost a mom to dementia, and I've seen how it progresses, and I'm not saying that he's in full blown dementia, but there's little doubt in my mind that he's in some early stages of it, and the fact that they're still propping him up, and that scares me too. Because I just wonder who is propping him up and who's waiting in the wings and who is he going to name as his vice president if he's not able to go on to be the president, or what forces in the party, you know, whether it's, you know, the big rumors, Hillary or Michelle Obama or, you know, whoever. But it's clear that Joe Biden's not going to serve much of a term, if any, if he were to get elected. And it's just. But the more he appears in the media, the more scary it gets. I'll tell you who is sharper than Joe. I talked to you a couple of hours ago. This was one of, if you have never gone and listened to one of our podcasts, go check out the Noon Hour today. Because last weekend, Vice President Pence told the story of a 90-year-old woman at Life Care Center in Kirkland. And how she had contracted COVID-19 and had battled through it and was getting better. And it's one of the very rare happy stories that's emerged out of all of this. And so, first of all, let me give another big credit to producer Nicole Thompson, who was able to track down, you know, this woman's family and get Geneva on the show with us. Because it was just one of the most delightful interviews that we've had in as long as I can remember. 90-year-old Geneva Wood and her daughter Cassie came on with us as well a couple of hours ago. But, oh my gosh, she was fun to talk to. Geneva told me that she couldn't believe that she had been diagnosed with COVID-19 at Life Care Center in Kirkland. Geneva, when they told you that you had the virus, what goes through your heart and your mind when you hear that news?
Well, it was complete shock because they told me I had pneumonia. And I had pneumonia before. So when they said you got the virus, I couldn't believe it. Because I hadn't been out. I went to the home health care because to have therapy. I couldn't walk. I couldn't talk. I couldn't do anything. And I went through their complete program and learned to do all of that. I was considered a person of the month. I was great. And then to tell you that, well, you don't know what to think.
No, but she had to deal with the reality. And the reason she was there, by the way, she was recovering from a stroke. And so she had that. She's 90 years old. She had all of these challenges that put her in the highest risk category. But Geneva told me she just has some more living to do. You must be a very strong woman, Geneva.
Well, that's what they say, and I do consider myself a strong woman. But I don't see any sense sitting back on my thumb and letting the world go by. I've got a lot of living to do.
You know, can we take a lesson from that? How many of us at 58 or 40 or 25 let the world go by when there's so much more living to do? And here's 90-year-old Geneva just coming off a stroke in COVID-19. And she's the one who's given us lessons on having more living to do. And she said it's because she's still here for a reason. What kind of things do you want to get back to doing?
I want to do whatever I can to help others to see that you don't give up. You just keep on fighting. And you have to have a lot of faith in God because he's the one that sees you through all of this. I don't take any of the credit at all. My family and my God have pulled me through this.
I love this woman. And then I played for her what Mike Pence said for her or said about her at the coronavirus task force briefing last weekend, where he cited Geneva as a symbol of strength and hope and courage through all of this. What is it like to have the vice president of the United States, Geneva, hold you up as a symbol of hope and inspiration right now?
Well, you just hope you can live up to all the things that people have said about you that is good. Thank God they didn't tell all the bad things.
And here's what Geneva's living up to.
I did hear one story this morning, Mr. President, about a senior named Geneva Wood. She actually is at the Life Care Center in Kirkland, Washington. She is not only a grandmother, she is a great-great-grandmother, 90 years young, and she tested positive for the coronavirus on March 6th. But by all accounts, she's doing well. She wanted America to know there is hope, and her strength and her enthusiasm is truly an inspiration to the nation.
Yeah. How about that, though? You got the vice president talking about you before the nation. Oh, and man, she told us that she was happy to be home from Life Care Center in Kirkland.
I'm sitting in my home, in my living room, in my recliner, eating my eggs and drinking my coffee. They gave me a clear bill of health. I do not have the virus. I am clear of the virus. I'm just as normal as you are. Now all I have to wait is for people to accept that I'm normal.
Geneva, I loved what you just said, but I have to correct one thing. I think you are far more normal than I am.
Well, not knowing you and you not knowing me, we have to accept each other.
Oh, I love her. I love her so much. Geneva Wood, 90 years old, home from Life Care Center in Kirkland, and on the recovery, not just from a stroke, but from COVID-19. You got to hear the whole interview. When we're off the air, we'll post it all in our podcast from our noon hour today. But she was just one of the most fun people I've talked to in a long, long time. And that is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We're still awaiting the start of today's coronavirus task force briefing from the White House. We'll bring that to you live here on 97.3 Cairo FM, because we don't censor the media like some other radio stations in Seattle. We'll do that as soon as they go live. And if they're running a little late, we'll bring you some news. And we got lots of other things to cover as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Still awaiting the coronavirus task force briefing from the White House, which we will bring you live here on the Dory Monson Show in 97.3 Cairo FM.
Hey, you know what, Dory?
Because we don't... Ha! Huh?
So I just wanted to tell everybody that we are posting that video of you giving a tour of your home office or home studio. Yes. So it's on Instagram, and I've also got a couple photos from your daughter of you actually broadcasting, right?
Really?
Yes.
So I'm on Insta?
You had no idea she was taking those, right?
I'm an Insta viral star now?
Well, we're working on it. So then I was just realizing we just got this great idea from a listener. There's many, I guess they're calling them quarantine challenges that are going around.
Is it the one I was just watching on YouTube?
Could have been. The daughter and dad dancing. Is that the one you're watching?
This is so weird that even when you and I are not in the same room, that here, I'm going to have to just turn up the volume on my laptop computer. Is it this one? Is this it?
I think it is.
And the dad's doing the high-pitched singing?
Yeah, that one I think is the right one. Yep.
What is the song? Who is this? I like this song.
Sean, you got any ideas? I don't know it.
I don't know.
Okay, somebody text me what song this is.
I need more time to figure it out.
This is like the worst quality coronavirus radio ever. I'm holding the crappy speaker on my laptop up to my microphone while I'm trying to talk in it at the same time. But yeah, it's a dad and daughter.
Right, so anyway, this listener was suggesting that you remake that video with your daughters. But, I mean, it doesn't have to be this particular video, but you guys should do some kind of challenge. There's also a push-up challenge, but given your knee situation, maybe that's
thing.
Not right.
Because I found this video to be delightful. And it's so weird. And people don't, you know, I mean, you probably have guessed this by now, of how in sync Nicole and I are, because, you know, we will say, what should we do in the next segment? And one of us will have already written it down, and the other one will say the exact same thing. I mean, we just completely know what the other is thinking about the show. But I just happened to see on the text message, somebody send this, and I cut and pasted it into YouTube during the news, and I watched it, and I found it delightful, and I was thinking, that would be fun to do something like that.
That's pretty funny.
Here's
the
problem.
It's Jess Glynn. That's who's singing.
Who is it?
Jess Glynn.
It's Jess Glynn. Okay, it's a great song. I love the song, but
hold my hand.
I don't know if my daughters would want to do that.
I think would do it, given the right video. So,
gosh, which one are you talking about? One might do that because the same one that you're talking about. She made a video this morning, a TikTok. I don't know any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was her face and weird body doing some song, and it was a TikTok video. And I guess it got some fantastic reviews when she pushed that out this morning. So
she's already ready to roll.
One of my daughters might do something like that with me.
I've already
but then
asked her
there's
to
me.
Do it. So she's working on it.
I know. But then, Nicole, there's me. I'm hideous.
No, it would
why,
be adorable.
Why would we want to put me out there?
You
there's a reason I'm on the radio.
You are God's creatures. You're not hideous. Nobody is hideous.
The only... The only word that was correct in that whole phrase was creature. No, there's seriously, truly, there's a reason. There was a time when I thought I wanted to be on TV. And I knew that in so many ways, creatively and others, you know, just writing and producing and the kinds of stories that I would come up with, I knew that I was better than these guys who were making five times what I was making. But nobody would ever give me a chance. And it's because even though I don't know how to say this without sounding immodest. When I was in my 20s, I was kind of cute, but I think the TV news directors, they were able to project just how hideous time would treat me over the next 10, 20, 30 years. And they said, why should we invest in this guy when nobody's going to want to welcome him into their homes 10 years from now? And so okay, look, but here's the thing. I'm home. I'm with my wife. I'm with two of my daughters while we're all going through what so many others are going through. If somebody has a great suggestion of what we should produce here, because here's the other thing, just to kind of let everybody in. There's a huge push for us to do, or for me in particular, to do more social media. Because we've had the Instagram account for a while, and I haven't taken to it. I think I'm pretty good on Twitter. I think our show's been really good on Facebook. But I just haven't figured out some of the other social mediums yet. But if somebody has a great suggestion of what we should do, how should they get that to us? Should they text it to us?
Yeah, sure. Text us or email us or message us on social, because we're on there and we do get those messages.
Yeah. Send it on Twitter at Dory Monson, because I am on Twitter. I check that all the time.
I know.
Maybe
they could also settle this for us, because I think that more of our audience is on Facebook and a lot on Instagram. They haven't all found us on Instagram, but they're there.
Well, that's
I'm not
because
sure
I
they're
been
on
doing
Twitter.
Anything
I think Twitter is kind of a hit and miss. Not everybody is on Twitter.
Okay.
People should tell us, where do you want these posted? What's your favorite social media?
I like it. All right. So I'm going to check the text messages until we get off the air at 3 o'clock. So you can text us at 98973, and I'll keep monitoring those, and we'll see if we can come up with something. But I don't know. I need to minimize any visual image of myself.
Well, I will say, with that video that you posted or that you took of yourself in your office this morning, so you're going from, you're holding the camera too low. You've got to hold the camera high so you don't get the double chin thing. And then you hold the camera high.
I don't know any of that. Well, don't post it then.
No,
I'll redo it. No, what? No, wait a second. Why?
You have to be taught
Delete
a lesson.
It.
You have to be taught a lesson, Dory. There are too many people.
Lesson received.
Doing the down
angle. Next time you'll remember.
No, if there's a better way to shoot it, then you should have told me before you posted it, and I'd reshoot it.
I think this video is actually
only
adorable.
A minute.
Because you're wearing a hat. It's very cute.
The camera adds 10 pounds, Dory, but the question is, how many cameras are on you?
Oh, good one, Shine. I stepped on the scale. It said one at a time, please. Jeez. Okay. So anyway, if you have a great suggestion for us, 98973, and we'll see what we can come up with to deal with the tedium of what we're all dealing with here. The coronavirus task force briefing. It was supposed to start 12 minutes ago. We're still waiting for that. We'll bring that to you live. And if they are still running late, we'll come back and wrap things up here on a Wednesday afternoon edition of the Dory Monson Show. Delete it! Delete now! Reshoot it! Come on! Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Speaking of it, down the stretch we come. I mentioned this a few days ago. the one sport that's still going in America is horse racing. It's weird. I understand why, because America is a very much a gambling culture. And now the tribes have shut down their casinos. You know, lots of money is bet on sporting events, legally and illegally, all of which are closed down. And they're not allowing any fans to come to the track. But, you know, you got TVG and people who have online accounts. I played a little horse racing last weekend. And they are trying to stay open, but now there's a legal fight down in Florida where Gulfstream Park has been ordered by the governor to close, even though they don't have any fans coming in. But they are now filing an injunction to try to stay open. And the reason is because there's no other place to go with your gambling dollars. And so all the money that's being wagered online on horse racing, the tracks get a cut of that. And so it's just weird now that baseball, basketball, the NCAA tournament, the Olympics have all announced that they have shut down and horse racing goes on in America. It's very strange. I mentioned this. In fact, I led the show with this because I don't want, in the midst of all of the COVID-19, which is, I believe, the most significant local story and maybe national story of my lifetime. And local because we were ground zero. New York is overtaking us as the hottest hotbed. But I don't want to ignore other significant news. And I mentioned and I led the show by talking with Washington State Patrol Chief John Batiste because last night, one of the heroes, the men and women who serve, and I'm not just talking putting themselves in the front line with the criminals like this trooper did last night, but they're encountering people. They don't know if they've got COVID-19. And, I mean, think of the anarchy if we didn't have our cops. And think of the danger if we didn't have our fire departments and Medic One and all the people, the first responders who are still working. So I wanted to say thank you and then a special God bless you today because you lost one of your own yesterday. And that was Washington State Patrol Trooper Justin Schaefer. He was killed because of a scumbag criminal, allegedly. A 39-year-old guy, he had gone into a convenience store, shoplifted some stuff. When the convenience store clerk followed him out, she took pictures of his, he had a personalized license plate. That's always wise when you're a criminal. I want to know what it says. I want to know what his plate said, this criminal. But he went in, and when she was taking pictures of his license plate, the alleged thief pulled out a stun gun and threatened her and another employee that he was going to tase them. And then he got in his vehicle and he drove it as if he was going to run them down. But that led to a high-speed pursuit on I-5 southbound. And the sheriff's personnel that first were called, they called the Washington State Patrol. And down near Chehalis, a State Patrol trooper, 28 years old, Justin Schaefer. He'd been with the State Patrol for 7 years. So this is a guy who knew when he was a kid that he wanted to be a cop. But being a cop was in his family. His father is the police chief in Chehalis. And he was a married guy, this 28-year-old trooper, Schaefer. Married, siblings, mom and dad. And responding to the sheriff's personnel that had tried to encounter this thief, they had asked him if he could roll out some spike strips on I-5 so that they could corral this guy. And as Trooper Schaefer was out there to deploy the spike strips, the fleeing suspect hit him at freeway speed on I-5. And Trooper Schaefer was taken to Providence Centralia Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. And it breaks my heart. And it's another reminder that we need to be thankful for all of our first responders, because there's still lots of crime going on around here. And I led the show with this. Again, if you want to hear, it was just an incredibly emotional interview with State Patrol Chief John Batiste. But let me just read to you what he wrote about this guy. In his last moments on the earth, he was wearing the uniform of the Washington State Patrol. We must pause and reflect on the character of each of the men and women we've lost over the years. Like Justin, they each served as one of the state's guardians, and each day of their work, they walked into unknown dangers with well-known courage.
Hey, Dory, I'm sorry to interrupt you at the end of that, but Trump's talking right now. We're going to go to that.
There you go. All right. And as we wrap up President Trump, the Coronavirus Task Force briefing, we take you to you live here on the Dory Monson Show, Cairo Radio. I'll see you tomorrow at high noon.
For answering the call, following our guidelines, and making the sacrifices required to overcome this terrible threat more aggressively, we commit to social distancing. So important. Social distancing, such an important phrase. And we do it right now. The more lives we can save, and the sooner we can eventually get people back to work, back to school, and back to normal. And there are large sections of our country probably can go back much sooner than other sections. And we're obviously looking at that also. People were asking, is that an alternative? I say, absolutely, it is an alternative. I have now approved major disaster declarations for New York, California, Washington, Iowa, Louisiana, Texas, and Florida. That has great significance, as you know, and legal significance. We're in a constant grouping, and I can say this, we have a large grouping of people that does nothing but communicate with the various officials, including we've been spending a lot of time with New York officials, because that really is by far the hottest spot. They've got a number of very tough weeks ahead of them. The governor's doing a very good job. I spoke to the governor, Governor Cuomo, last night and this morning. And he mentioned that in his remarks that he's using the that we are using. And I think he feels, because he understands negotiation, he thinks we're using very appropriately the Defense Production Act, and we are. We're using it where needed. It's a great point of leverage. It's a great negotiating tool. But I will tell you, there's tremendous spirit from people and tremendous spirit with respect to these companies, and I don't have to use it very much at all. They want to do it. As you know, General Motors is involved, Ford's involved, 3M's involved, others are involved, and they're all working very hard to produce product, different, all different products. We had very little product when we came. We built it up, and we give it away as fast as we can to the different states. We're also, as you know, building numerous hospitals and medical centers throughout certain areas in New York. It's at the Convention Center, the Javits Convention Center. We're doing four hospitals, and we're doing throughout the state four medical centers there, somewhat different. I want you to know that I'm doing everything in my power to help the city pull through this challenge. I'm working very hard in New York. It's really by far our biggest problem. Maybe it will be, maybe it won't be. But there's a lot of good, capable people working on it with us, and our teams are working very well with the state representatives. We're also doing some very large testings throughout the country. I told you yesterday that in South Korea, and this is not a knock in any way, because I just spoke with President Moon. We had a very good conversation about numerous other things. They've done a very good job in testing, but we now are doing more testing than anybody by far. We do more in 8 days than they do in 8 weeks, and we go up on a daily basis exponentially. So it's really good. By the way, while I'm on it, I also spoke with Prime Minister Abe of Japan last night, and I congratulated him on a wise choice. I think it's going to be a fantastic Olympics, 2021. I think it's going to be a fantastic Olympics. It was the absolute right decision to delay it for a full year and now have a full, beautiful Olympics. It's going to be very important because it's probably the first time, maybe ever, or certainly in a long time, that it was on a odd year. It's always on an even year, they tell me. But he's going to have a fantastic success, and now they'll have even more time. He didn't need any more time. Everything was perfectly ready. What a job they've done. But Japan, I want to congratulate Japan, the IOC, and Prime Minister Abe on a great decision. I think it's going to be a fantastic Olympics. I told him I'll be there. I'll be there. As we fight to protect American lives, we're also protecting American livelihoods. Democrats and Republicans in the Senate are very close to passing an emergency relief bill for American workers, families, and businesses. This legislation, in addition to the two bills I signed this month, it includes, as you know, sick leave, and we have all sorts of things in for the workers, for families. But we have a tremendous paid sick leave provision for workers at no cost at all to the employers. And that's a big thing, no cost to the employers. We want to get everybody back working. Together, this $2.2 trillion legislative package is bigger than anything I believe ever passed in Congress. Perhaps, relatively speaking, if you go back, look during the FDR New Deal days, there was something that if you time value it, you could say it was bigger. I don't know. But this is certainly, in terms of dollars, by far and away the biggest ever, ever done. And that's a tremendous thing because a lot of this money goes to jobs, 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 and families, families, families. The Senate bill, as you know, includes $350 billion in job retention loans for small businesses, with loan forgiveness available for businesses that continue paying their workers. They continue paying their workers. That's what we want. We want them to keep their workers and pay their workers. This will help businesses keep workers in the payroll and allow our economy to quickly accelerate as soon as we defeat the virus. $300 billion in direct cash payments will be available for every American citizen earning less than $99,000 per year. That would be $3,400 very quickly for the typical family of four. Nothing like that's ever been done in our country. Up to $250 billion in expanded unemployment benefits. The average worker who has lost his or her job will receive 100% of their salary for up to four full months. Unlike normal unemployment benefits, independent contractors and the self-employed will be eligible. So you have independent contractors and self-employed people will be eligible for this. Over $100 billion to support the heroic work of our doctors, nurses, and hospitals. They've been incredible. $45 billion for disaster relief fund. So we are setting up a fund of $45 billion dollars for disaster relief. That's more than doubling the amount available to support my national emergency and disaster declarations. It's a doubling up. $27 billion to build up the strategic national stockpile with critical supplies, including masks, respirators, pharmaceuticals, and everything you can imagine, because it was very depleted, like our military was depleted. Now we have a brand new military. Never had a military like this. We have equipment either coming or it's already come. For the most part, it's already come. But we have a lot of things that will soon be coming. Planes, missiles, rockets, lots of things. But the stockpile was very depleted, like everything else. This will also include significant funding for the development of vaccines on top of the $8 billion we approved several weeks ago. Over $500 billion in support for the hardest hit industries, with a ban on corporate stock buybacks, which is something I insisted on. And frankly, I tell you, the Republicans wanted that and the Democrats wanted that. We want them to use the money for the companies and the planes or whatever they may be helping to get over this rough patch. And I don't think it's going to end up being such a rough patch. I think it's going to, when we open, especially if we can open it, the sooner the better, it's going to open up like a rocket ship. I think it's going to go very good and very quickly. And you're going to have some tough new limits on executive compensation also. They need the money. They're going to have to sort of just make things work because we're interested in the workers, the jobs. And we're interested in the companies because that's really what fuels the workers in those great jobs. And we also have $16 billion in funding for the purchase of personal protective equipment. You know about that, such as masks and respirators through the strategic national stockpile. I encourage the House to pass this vital legislation and send the bill to my desk for signature without delay. I will sign it immediately. We will have a signing, and it'll be a great signing and a great day for the American worker and for American families and, frankly, for American companies, some of which were having the best years they've ever had these last few years. And then a little bit less than a month ago, they went into a position that they haven't seen because of the hidden enemy, the virus. Earlier today, I spoke to the leaders of many of America's amazing nonprofit organizations. I thank them for their unwavering and unwavering devotion to American people, to American families, to our nation. And they have been fantastic. They've been collecting supplies, distributing food, supporting healthcare workers, caring for vulnerable workers and families. I encourage them to continue to do it. But I'll tell you, the nonprofits have been fantastic. They've been great. They're great people, actually. I know a lot of them. Finally, I want to provide a brief update on the critical supplies. Through FEMA, the federal government has delivered or is in the process of shipping 9.4 million N95 respirators. Think of that, 9.4 million. 20 million surgical masks, and we have others that we think are going to be delivered pretty quickly. The whole world, you know, it's not just us, it's not just the states. The whole world is trying to get these things, so in competition with many, many countries. I believe today you broke the 150 mark for the virus. We have 150 countries, over 150 countries where you have this virus. And nobody would ever believe a thing like that's possible. Nobody could have ever seen something like this coming. But now we know, and we know it can happen and happen again. And if it does, somebody's going to be very well prepared because of what we've learned and how we've done. It's been incredible how we've done.
KIRO-FM, Tacoma, Seattle.
And the news, the reporters, the media always likes to bring South Korea. They called me and they told me, it's amazing. Your testing procedures are amazing. Plus, we have a test that's a very high-level test, and it's a test that's very accurate. 3.1 million face shields, 2.6 million surgical gowns, 14.6 million gloves, and almost 6,000 ventilators, which go to the areas of greatest needs. We sent, over the last day, 4,000 ventilators to New York. And I spoke with the governor about that. He was happy. I spoke with the mayor also about that, Mayor de Blasio. He was very happy. It's hard not to be happy with the job we're doing, that I can tell you. Throughout this national emergency, everyday heroes continue to step forward and demonstrate the extraordinary character of our nation, including the people behind me. By the way, these people are amazing. They are amazing people, and they become, I don't know, maybe I should just speak for myself, but to me, they become friends. Maybe they don't like me. Maybe they don't. Maybe they do. I don't know. All I can tell you is they're talented people. They work very hard. In Maryland, a 7-year-old boy used his own birthday money to buy meals for dozens of senior citizens. In Nevada, a college student recruited 90 of her friends to help deliver groceries and supplies to the most vulnerable. This is happening all over the country. Thousands and thousands of instances. I could stand up here all day and tell you about other things. In Minnesota, hundreds of medical students have volunteered to provide child care for hospital workers, helping to keep our doctors and nurses on the front lines, fighting to save lives. These inspiring Americans remind us that we all have a role to play in winning this great national battle, and it's really a worldwide battle. We're dealing with other nations all the time. The people here are. I am a little bit. I take calls from a lot of people. They're in trouble. A lot of countries are in big trouble. So now we will hear from our great Secretary of the Treasury. He's been working rather hard, I will tell you. Steve Mnuchin is a fantastic guy, and he loves our country, and he's been dealing with both sides, Republican and Democrats. He sort of lived over in that beautiful building. It's a very beautiful building. To me, one of the most beautiful buildings actually in the world, and he's gotten to know it, Steve, very well. So if we could have a little update, Steve, would be fantastic as to how we're doing and what it's looking like. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. And first, let me say I would like to thank Mitch McConnell for his leadership, and I'd also like to thank Chuck Schumer for the enormous bipartisan support we had on this bill, and the many senators, both Republicans and Democrats, that worked tirelessly over the last 5 days on all the task force. As the president said, I got to live in the LBJ room for the last 5 days, and we couldn't be more pleased with the unprecedented response from the Senate to protect American workers and American business in this situation. The president has outlined many of these, but let me just quickly go through them. Again, small business retention loans. This will cover roughly 50% of the private payroll in small businesses, where we will immediately make loans that will supply 8 weeks of salaries as long as they keep workers employed and overhead. And those loans will be forgiven at the end of the period as long as they keep workers employed. These are SBA loans, but the Treasury will be issuing new regulations authorizing almost every single FDIC-insured bank to make these. I expect by the end of next week, we will have a very simple process where these can be made and dispersed in the same day. So this will be a very simple system to get money into small business hands. For companies that don't qualify that, we have a economic program of tax incentives to retain workers. And as the president said, we have enhanced unemployment insurance for people don't fit into these two programs that will be administered through the states. We also have economic impact payments. These will be within the next 3 weeks, direct payments into most people's deposit accounts. And for those that don't have it, we will be having the checks in the mail. Treasury will have additional authorities. We have $500 billion that we can use to work with the Federal Reserve for emergency programs. That will create up to an additional $4 trillion, if needed, to support American business and American workers in an unprecedented way. And then finally, the president mentioned $100 billion to hospitals and $150 billion to states that have specific coronavirus expenses. As well as many additional things. Mr. President, I especially want to thank you and the Vice President. You were constantly available to us. We spoke constantly throughout the day. You gave us guidance and quick decisions on many issues. And again, thank everybody for this great bipartisan work. This is going to be enormous help for the American workers and the American economy. The President was very determined that Congress would move swiftly to protect hardworking Americans in business in this unprecedented situation.
Thank you very much, Steve. Great job. Day and night, right? Day and night. That was a lot of work, and we'll see how it all goes. We still need a vote, Steve, don't we? Do you have a question? Yes.
How long do you think this bill will keep the economy afloat? Hopefully a long time.
We'll see. If we have to go back, we have to go back. We're going to take care of the American worker. We're going to take care of these companies that fuel this country and make the country great. It's not their fault. It's not their fault. But we think
we've anticipated 3 months. Hopefully we won't need this for 3 months. Hopefully this war will be won quicker. But we expect that this is a significant amount of money, if needed, to cover the economy.
And don't forget, a lot of this is going to be to keep companies that are very strong, AAA-rated companies previously, to keep them going. And it's going to be in the form of loans, so the money's going to come back. This money's got, a lot of this money's coming back.
Separately, let me ask you about something you said yesterday. You said we should never be reliant on a foreign country for the means of our own survival.
Yeah.
What did you mean
by that? Well, I've been
saying
that for a long time. Well, we're reliant on many countries where we give up our supply chains, we give up our factories, we give up our production facilities, and we can buy it someplace else for a little bit lower price. But it's really costing us more when that happens because we lose jobs, we lose everything, and we lose our independence, and we can't let that happen. So we'll be making some changes. We have been making those changes.
Is there an executive order to basically ban the export of medical equipment?
I don't know that we'll need that, but I think it's happening by itself. I think a lot of things are happening. Well, some people, we make the best medical equipment in the world, and you have some people like the European Union, they don't take it because they have specifications that don't allow our equipment in because it's designed in a different way. Even though it's a better way, it's designed. They're all playing games against us, okay? They've been playing games against us for years, and no president has ever done anything about it. But the European Union, you look at medical equipment, we make the best medical equipment in the world, but we can't sell it because we're not appropriately. And yet we take their medical equipment in our country. We're changing things, Steve. All this is changing. But they have specifications so that our equipment, designed specifically so that our equipment can't come into their countries. It's a very terrible thing that's happened to our country. And let me tell you, some of the people that took the biggest advantage of us are allies. You know, we talk about allies. They took advantage of us in many ways, but financially as well as even militarily. When you look at, if you look at NATO, the abuse that was given to our country on NATO, where they wouldn't pay. And we were paying for everybody. We're paying. Now, because of me, they're paying a lot. Now they've paid $135 billion more. And then ultimately, Secretary General Stoltenberg, who I think what you would say is maybe my biggest fan, we got him to pay an additional $400 billion other countries. And but you know that. And then there's the trade. They make it almost impossible for us to have a fair deal. They know this. They know I'm just waiting. We have all the advantages, by the way. It's going to be easy when I decide to do it. But this isn't the right time to do it. But we've been treated very, very unfairly by the European Union.
Mr. President, four Republican senators have indicated that the extra $600 for unemployment insurance may encourage workers to leave their jobs, even though you can only collect unemployment if you're fired. I'm curious what you think of that concern.
Well, I know the issue very well. We talked about it just a little while ago. I'm going to let you maybe discuss that.
Sure. Now, the President, I spoke to several of those senators today, but let me just explain the issue, which is we wanted to have enhanced unemployment insurance. Most of these state systems have technology that's 30 years old or older. So if we had the ability to customize this with much more specifics, we would have. This was the only way we could assure that the states could get money out quickly in a fair way. So we used $600 across the board. And I don't think it'll create incentives. Most Americans, what they want to keep their jobs. And I said for 50% of these businesses, they will have the businesses keep those jobs. So this was our number one issue was how do we make sure that American workers who needed to keep getting paid. This is no fault of their own that businesses have been shut down. The president and vice president wanted to make sure those hardworking Americans got money, and this was the most efficient way of doing it.
Senators that you spoke with, are they in agreement now?
I'm not going to comment on the specifics of where they are, but I would say, you know, our expectation is this bill passes tonight and gets to the House tomorrow, and they pass it. We need to get this money into the American economy and American workers. That's the importance of this.
The one good thing when you think about that, people need to get actually more money, but we don't want to give a disincentive. But they have been talking about that. It's a good question, actually. Yes, ma'am, please.
Yes, thank you. The family of, on another subject, the family of retired FBI agent Robert Levinson says that U.S. officials have concluded that he's died in Iranian custody. Are you aware of that? And so, how did U.S. officials reach that conclusion?
You know, I've been very much involved in that. And he was a great gentleman and a great family. It's just, I mean, I have to say this, and they've been making the statement to the family, I believe, but it's not looking good. He wasn't well for years anyway in Iran. It's not looking promising. We've gotten so many people back. We've got two people back this week. But Robert Levinson, who was outstanding, he's been sick for a long time. And he had some rough problems prior to his detainment or capture. And we feel terribly for the family. But
do you accept that he is dead?
No, I don't accept that he's dead. I don't accept it. I mean, I'm telling you, it's not looking great, but I won't accept that he's dead. They haven't told us that he's dead, but a lot of people are thinking that that is the case. Feel badly about it.
Mr. President, you tweeted earlier linking the closing of the country to your election success in November. Is this Easter timeline based on your political interests?
What do you mean by election success? No.
You tweeted. You said that the media wants the country to remain closed to hurt your
odds. No, I think the media. Yeah, no, the media would like to see me do poorly in the election. I think
lawmakers and economists on both sides of the aisle have said that reopening the country by Easter is not a good idea. What is that plan based on?
Just so you understand, are you ready? I think there are certain people that would like it not to open so quickly. I think there are certain people that would like it to do financially poorly because they think that would be very good as far as defeating me at the polls. And I don't know if that's so, but I do think it's so that that there are people in your profession that would like that to happen. I think it's very clear. I think it's very clear that there are people in your profession that write fake news. You do. She does. There are people in your profession that write fake news. They would love to see me for whatever reason, because we've done one hell of a job. Nobody's done the job that we've done. And it's lucky that you have this group here right now for this problem, or you wouldn't even have a country left. Okay. Go ahead,
Mr. President, two questions. The first one, once you sign the $2 trillion package, how soon or how rapidly do you expect to see
Who are you with?
I'm with CBN. And my second question is, we are hearing you are pushing for April 6th to have direct payments issued to taxpayers. Is that the target date?
I think it's
I would say our expectation is within 3 weeks, we will have direct payments out where we have depository information. And we're looking to get a lot more information, and we have procedures to do that. So 3 weeks for that. And I would say the end of next week, we want all the banks to be able to originate loans same day.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two questions for you. One is that tomorrow you're going to be speaking with the G20 leaders, and I want to know if you're going to lead an effort to craft a worldwide ban on wild animal markets so as to prevent another pandemic, given that COVID-19 is a zoonotic that was transferred to humans in trade of exotic animals.
Yeah, I don't know that subject's going to come up. There is a lot of talk that's how this all happened, came out of China, and they say that's how it happened in China. So it's something maybe will be talked about, but it's not the top of my list.
Yes,
I think we'll have a very good conference tomorrow.
Well, and follow up. Also, Dr. Ashish Shah, who's the head of Harvard's Global Health Institute, says that the key to getting this economy open as soon as possible is to test everyone who needs testing so we can quarantine all infected individuals and allow everyone else to go back to work immediately. Would you subscribe to that strategy?
No, but we have tested more than anybody. I saw him.
And if not, how many deaths are acceptable?
Yeah. How many? None. Okay. How many deaths are acceptable to me? None. Okay, none, if that's your question. Look, I saw him. I saw his statement. We have tested by far more than anybody. We're testing more than anybody right now. There's nobody even close. And our tests are the best tests. They're the most accurate tests. But if you're saying we're going to test 350 million people, I watched his statement. I disagree with it. We can go to certain states. I could name them now, but I'm not going to do that. But we can go to certain states right now that have virtually no problem or a very small problem. We don't have to test the entire state in the Middle West or wherever they may be. We don't have to test the entire state. I think it's ridiculous. We don't have to do it. A lot of those states could go back right now, and they probably will, because at some point in the not-too-distant future, certain states are going to come off the rolls. Maybe New York can't, and maybe California can't. Maybe the state of Washington can't, although if you look at them, their biggest problem was in one nursing home. Yeah, go ahead.
But the states aren't siloed, and so, I mean, somebody, if you test one state, and then the person moves over to the other state, well then...
You know, you're going to just look at that. But if you take a look at the states, and many states that I'm talking about, they don't have a problem. We have some big problems, but it's confined to certain areas, high-density areas. So why would we test the entire nation, 350 people? With that being said, I'm going to say it again. We tested far more than anybody else. We have the ability to test. I mean, we've come a long way from an obsolete, broken system that I inherited. We have now tested, with the best test, far more than anybody else. When I say anybody else, I'm talking about other countries. No country is even close. They came out with a statistic, yesterday that I heard from Dr. Birx, where it's for eight days here, more than 8 weeks in South Korea. And South Korea's done a good job. But we did in 8 days more than South Korea did in 8 weeks. That's a big number. And we're getting, I said before, exponentially better. Every day it's going up substantially. We have an incredible apparatus built now. But no, I don't want to test 350 million people. I think it's ridiculous. Yes, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. President. Two questions. One follow-up on the G20, because the UN asked the G20 countries to do for more resources for a coordinated stimulus package, ban on tariffs, waive on sanctions to try to prevent what they call an apocalyptic pandemic. Would you consider those measures? And
with respect to what?
Tariffs and also related also to waive tariffs and also
we have strong borders.
Yeah. And would you consider to join this global effort?
So before I came here, we weren't into borders. We had a country, people could come in. We had a whole different deal. Now we're up to almost 164 miles. Think of that, 164 miles of wall, big, beautiful wall. And in those areas, it's very, very tough to come in. We've been very tough on the borders. I mean, where we have the wall built, nobody's getting through. Now, they're going around, but that's a long trip. They're going around. That's the way they get through. But, no, I'm very strong on borders, and I don't want people coming in here. What I want is if they're going to come in, they have to come in legally. They have to come in through merit. We're not having the people that you're talking about come into our country.
All right.
Thank you, sir. Question for you and for Dr. Fauci, if you'll let me. Both Republican and Democrat packages of the stimulus included $25 million worth of funding for the Kennedy Performance Arts Center here in Washington, D.C. Shouldn't that money be going to masks, respirators?
Well, I tell you what, I approved that. And I knew it was $35 million, and we actually took off $10. But I'm a fan of that. Although I haven't spent time there because I'm far too busy. I'd love to go there evenings, but I'm too busy doing things because that's more important for me than going there. But the Kennedy Center has suffered greatly because nobody can go there. It's essentially closed. And they do need some funding. And I said, look, that was a Democrat request. That was not my request. But you got to give them something. It's something that they wanted. You know, it works that way. The Democrats have treated us fairly. I really believe that we've had a very good back and forth. And I say that with respect to Chuck Schumer. I spoke to him a number of times. But, you know, they had requests also. So that was a request. There were 35, as you know, and it came down to 25. We got it down to 25. We agreed. I said, that's a lousy soundbite. That's not a good soundbite. But that's the way life works. With that being said, the Kennedy Center, they do a beautiful job, an incredible job. David Rubenstein does a fantastic job. He's very much involved, and he puts up a lot of money, and he does things that a lot of people wouldn't be able to do or do. But they've been essentially closed. They have tremendous deficits that are built up. I mean, this thing has been devastating to it. So I didn't have a big problem with it. But this was a request from the Democrats because of the fact that they have a facility that's essentially closed up.
Yeah. Another question, sir.
In other words, you couldn't go there if you wanted to. If I wanted to go there tonight to look at Romeo and Juliet, I'd love to see Romeo and Juliet tonight, right? You know what happened? They said, sorry, 250 people or 50 people, whatever it might be down to. Go ahead.
And then earlier today, Senator Marco Rubio told RCP that, quote, the World Health Organization showed favoritism to China, unquote. And then Representative Michael McCaul, the ranking member on the House Foreign Relations Committee, he questioned the integrity of the World Health Organization's director, saying, quote, that there were several red flags in his past with respect to his relationship with China. Do you agree? Do you think the World Health Organization showed favoritism? And then once all the dust settles, do you think that the United States should re-explore its relationship with the World Health Organization?
Well, I think there is a lot of, certainly a lot of talk that has been very unfair. I think that a lot of people feel that it's been very unfair. It's been very, very much sided with China. And a lot of people are not happy about it. At the same time, Dr. Fauci and myself and other people, there are people on there that we like and we know. A lot of, I think your friends are on there, a lot of good people, a lot of good professionals. I don't know, it'd be interesting to hear if you'd like to talk about the world WHO. But the fact is that I have heard for years that that is very much biased toward China. So I don't know. Dr., you want me to get you into this political mess?
No, I don't want you to do that, but I will. Tedros is really an outstanding person. I've known him from the time that he was the Minister of Health of Ethiopia. I mean, obviously, over the years, anyone who says that the WHO has not had problems has not been watching the WHO. But I think under his leadership, they've done very well. He has been all over this. I was on the phone with him a few hours ago leading a WHO call.
Transparency,
no,
sir?
No, I'm not talking about China. You asked me about Tedros.
World Health Organization praising China for its transparency and leadership on their response to the pandemic?
You know, I can't comment on that because, I mean, I don't have any viewpoint into it. I mean, I don't even know what your question is.
Can I follow up on that phone call, please?
Welcome to the team. You know, let me just tell you, I've heard that for years. I spoke to him yesterday. Seems fine to me. I don't know. But we're the ones that gave the great response, and we're the ones that kept China out of here. And if we didn't do it, you'd have thousands and thousands of people died, would have died, that are now living and happy. If I didn't do that early call on China, and nobody wanted that to happen, everybody thought it was just unnecessary to do it. And if we didn't do that, thousands and thousands of people would have died, more than what's happened. So that's it. All right, maybe one more. Steve, go ahead.
When you have this G20 meeting tomorrow, what sort of coordinated response are you expecting?
No coordinated. We're going to have a meeting with the 20 nations total, including us, and there'll be it'll be a conference call tomorrow morning sometime. I look forward to people I know, I like. I think in every instance, I like every one of them. But it'll be an interesting call. You'll be the first to know.
Next week, when the 15-day period ends, what should we expect then? Are you going to extend it for another week?
We'll be talking. I'll be speaking with Tony. I'll be speaking with Deborah. I'll be speaking with some of the people that they like and respect, and that they're going to bring along with them. We'll be speaking to Vice President Mike Pence and Steve, and we'll be speaking to everybody. I'm not going to do anything rash or hastily. I don't do that. But the country wants to get back to work. Our country was built to get back to work. We don't have a country where they say, hey, let's close it down for 2 years. We can't do that. It's not our country. So we're going to be talking, and it could be we'll do sections of our country. There's big sections of our country that are very, you know, little affected by what's taken place. Then there are other sections that are very heavily affected. So there's a big difference. But no, I would say by Easter we'll have a recommendation, and maybe before Easter, and at the end of the 15th day, or even during the 15th day, I think we'll have some kind of a recommendation. But our country wants to get back to work, Steve. I have had so many people, and they want to practice social distancing, and they want to practice no handshaking. No handshaking. They're not going to walk around hugging and kissing each other in the office when they come back, even though they may feel like it. They're going to wash their hands more than they've ever done. They're going to do all the things you're supposed to do. But Steve, you know what? It's time. People want to get back to work. I get it from both sides, in all fairness. And maybe it's a combination of both. Tony said before, a combination of both is sometimes very good. But there are areas that possibly, probably, they won't qualify. There are other areas that qualify almost now. So we're going to have to see what happens. But it'll be an interesting period of time. I'd like to get our country back. I have tremendous numbers of people wanting to go back. You have store owners where the store is sitting there. They don't know what's happened. They got to get back. You have businesses that are going to be closed. The longer we stay out, the longer we do it. We want to go quickly. The longer we stay out, the harder it is to bring this incredible. We were having the most successful years that we've ever had in the history of our country. You saw what happened yesterday with the stocks, and today they're up. I'm telling you, if Steve gets the deal done, the incredible incentive deal, it's going to take care of people. It's going to take care of our workers. It's going to take care of companies that employ all these workers, small and big. By the way, I would say we spend more time on the small companies, Steve, than we did on the big companies. You know, people ask about that. We spend more time thinking about the small businesses than the big. And that's, but you know, that really fuels our country. We want to get back, and the people want to get back. We want to get our country going again, and we'll be able to do that. So Vice President's going to stay with you, and going to take a few more questions specifically, and I will see you tomorrow. Thank you very much.
How long were you on the DPA?